Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. They're the exclusive distributor of MasterMeter AMI-AMR technology. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Today, we head back to Louisiana to visit a small town just on the other side of Lake Pontchartrain from the Big Easy. And we talk to a mayor who faced a famous big storm early on in his time as mayor, and he has led his community to steady growth ever since. We're going to go talk to Mayor Bob Zabia in the small town of Ponchatoula, Louisiana. Come go with me.
Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. But life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia.
I'm now in the city of Ponchatoula, Louisiana, and I'm sitting in what used to be City Hall. So it's either Old City Hall or New City Hall Annex, and we're going to get the little information about that. But I'm joined by the mayor of Ponchatoula, Louisiana, Mayor Robert, or Bob Zabia. So Mayor Zabia, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
And Mayor, thanks for being in Ponchatoula.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I got to drive around a little bit. I don't always get to see the sights before the interview, but this morning I got to drive around a little bit. You got a nice downtown. There was one building in particular I saw that I think you were telling me a little bit about. But before we get started with our interview, give us a little bit of history. This is a very nice and kind of newly decorated building, but apparently it's been here for a while because I said it was Old City Hall.
And Mitch, it has. It was Old City Hall. It was built originally in 1966 through a bond issue that was funded that built fire stations as well, fire stations as well. And then, you know, years later, we moved over across the street to the present City Hall, which was an old supermarket. So when we vacated this building, the police department moved in.
Okay.
And just recently, we completed a complex for the police department that is actually larger than City Hall. It's a very, very nice building. We were able to fund it through local funds and through some capital outlay money that we received from the state, which began, I don't know, probably 6 or 8 years ago.
And I think saw it as just a block down from what's now City Hall.
That's correct. Yep. And that used to be the old Homestead building. And we were able to procure it and begin working to develop the plans for the police department. It's really very nice, turned out very nice. They moved in it a little bit earlier this year. So when they moved into that building, moved out of this building, we took it. We knew we wanted to hire a downtown development director and a revitalization person. And so we started with her office first. We've renovated the front offices as well. And we're also turning the old council chambers back into a courtroom.
Okay. Now, Ocilla, we have to use the council chambers on a different day, becomes the municipal court. And so the judge sits in the chair that I usually sit in to run council meetings. So you had the same room, and now
that's correct.
So you don't have to fight with the judge for the
all
seat.
That's correct. All that goes in our present City Hall. And two things we wanted to accomplish here is to move the court over here again And then courtroom also serves as a voting precinct.
Okay.
So we're going to move the voting precinct back over here in the next couple of months. I think that'll have to take some parish council action to actually move it back over here. So we won't be sharing the council chambers in City Hall will just be used for council meetings and public hearings.
And I think you said, because we were talking about the police department being in this building. Now they've got their own new building, and that's why you're developing this one for some other uses. But there's a building that's downtown I saw that's now a tourist information center near the what looks like an old train depot downtown. But it used to be the police department,
that's,
you said?
That's exactly right. It served as the police department for years and years, and the building itself, Matt, is probably 12 by 12.
I was going to say, it was not
and
large.
And it had a bathroom in it.
Okay. And is that, was there a cell in there too?
No.
Old drunk tank maybe?
No cell in there, but we converted it, you know, back when the PD moved down here, we converted it to the information center and it sits there. The chamber uses it as often as they need it for activities downtown, and Faith will be using it as well.
I've been in city halls where they explain this used to be the old police station, and there were two cells in here, and now they moved the criminals out somewhere else, and now at City Hall, so they moved some new criminals in, but that's all. Hopefully that's all in jest, although I know sometimes it's not.
Well, you wonder sometimes, don't you? We have some of those colorful communities around here.
Well, it sounds like you've got a lot of interesting things going on in Ponchatoula, some new efforts going on, but before we get to that, and we definitely will, I want to talk about you. Now that we've gotten a description of the building we're in, let's kind of go through your life, and I'll start with the same question I start with every guest. Were you born in Ponchatoula, Louisiana?
Absolutely, I was. I was born, raised, educated here, went to Southeastern in Hammond, graduated there. My wife is originally from Ponchatoula as well.
Okay.
I grew up, and actually, our home is about 3 blocks from where she grew up and about 5 blocks from where I grew up.
Now, Hammond, you said that's where you went to college.
Correct.
Well, that's where I stayed last night, actually. So I know it's about, 10 minutes away, I think, was the drive. So did you live at home while you were going to school?
I actually did, because I was working with my dad's firm on a survey crew.
Okay.
So when I wasn't in school, I was working.
You didn't even leave home to go to college.
I didn't. I didn't have to. I did some study over in LSU, but commuted for that.
Okay.
So, yes. This is all my life, you know.
Now, when you were graduating high school or when you were in college, but still home, were there some thoughts about maybe going off somewhere else, a big city, fortune and glory somewhere else?
You know, not really. I wasn't really interested in doing that. I was quite content to be here and watch things happen and be a part of it. I have really no desire to do that. Mm-hmm. My wife, as a matter of fact, graduated from Southeastern as well, but I think she stayed in the dorm for several years, stayed at home for a while. And then when she did her studies at LSU, she commuted back and forth as I did.
Yeah, yeah. You said you were on a survey crew. What did you get a degree in?
My degree is in marketing with a minor in accounting.
Okay.
From Southeastern.
And so after college, you stayed in the area. What did you do?
I worked for my dad's firm. And then through the years, we did a lot of surveying. And that's really where I began to get my start with preparing grants and doing grant administration for municipalities. You know, we did a lot of public works projects for communities all over South Louisiana, from Lafourche to Terrebonne, St. Tammany, up to St. Helena Parish. And that's where I began doing writing grants and administering the grants for public works projects in these municipalities and parish governments.
And so you made a career out of, I guess, you actually used the word consulting when we were talking as I was setting up and everything, but you were very involved with municipalities. And so you kind of got an education in city governments and how they work and some of the struggles and challenges. I assume before you even got interested in local politics, is that how you kind of got interested in local government?
I guess you could say that. I mean, I worked with a variety of, I will say, characters in government. We got to do some municipalities and parish governments. You just had to do your part. Others, you had to do more than your part because they didn't know what needed to be done. So we carried them a lot.
Yeah.
But through the years, we've made some good friends and good contacts through the parishes and through the municipalities, but also on the state and federal levels. Mm-hmm. You know, we've worked on all levels with all types of grants, from the feds to the state to the locals. It's been quite an experience.
Now, the business was based right here, so you stayed home, but obviously traveled a little bit and did some work for other municipalities throughout the state. How did you get involved? What motivated you? And when did you start in elected office?
When I was 55 years old is when I got involved. I saw municipalities and saw small towns, larger communities, parish governments, and I saw some things that they were doing that we weren't doing here.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I had a lot to offer to the municipality, to the city of Ponchatoula, with my experience.
Yeah.
And so at age 55 in 2004, I decided I would give it a run.
Okay.
So I did. First election.
Was that council first, or did you go straight for mayor?
Into the mayor's office.
Okay.
The current mayor had been elected to a higher post on the parish.
So it was an open seat.
So it was an open seat. I ran, and that election was, we had seven candidates for mayor. Campaign hard, had a tremendously organized campaign. My wife, Kim, has always been instrumental in the campaigns, and we were organized. I mean, we had everything covered, and we were successful. We came within 13 votes of winning.
Oh, without a runoff?
Without a runoff.
Wow.
And then
With the seven candidates, including you.
Including me.
Wow.
And we ended up, after the following week, when the voting machines were opened and the election results were made official, my nearest opponent was in the 30% range of votes, if I remember correctly. She walked over to my office, I think on a Thursday afternoon, and said, look, I'll concede the election to you if you do this, this, and this.
Okay.
And the this, and this was construct a sidewalk out to the shopping center so people could walk.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted some additional playground equipment in Qantas Park, which was just a block away.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted me to do something with a neighbor that she had not been able to do because she was a seated councilman at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And for 4 years, she had battled this battle and couldn't get anything accomplished and then wanted me to do it.
Right.
So that was one of the concessions.
So three. So here's the things that were important to her.
Right.
And the reasons she was running. And if you would make sure those things happened, then she'd concede. So
that's correct.
The position wasn't important to her as getting these things done.
Well, I would assume that was the case. But knowing also that she had a pretty high hill to cross, to climb to catch up with 13 votes that I needed to finish up. So anyway, we did two of the three things, and pretty quickly. But the issue with the neighbor just never did happen.
Unresolved.
Unresolved today. So, my answer to her was that I said, well, you know, you sat there for 4 years and you couldn't do it. Now you expect me to do it. So, I mean, we kind of left it at that. And she, for the most part, still not happy with me today. But anyway, we got two of the three things.
Oh, we got the sidewalk and the playground equipment.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it.
What is it? Let me back up a little bit. You've explained a little bit of background that you saw things going on in other municipalities. You saw a lot of it. I actually experienced this a little bit in Osceola. There are resources available from state agencies. There are programs. There are things that can be done to make improvements, revitalization efforts, various things. And you saw, hey, we're not taking advantage of this. I actually know, and you developed quite a network in your professional life. But what were some of maybe the specific things that motivated you? And the answer this too now, you could have run for a council seat first, but you ran for mayor. So why the mayor's office? And what were you trying to make sure got accomplished by running in 2004?
Well, I think that the vacancy of the office, for exiting of the existing mayor, made it very attractive for me to go. And it wasn't like, and I thought I didn't have experience in government before. I knew exactly what I needed to do. I can't tell you how many council meetings through the years I'd attended and parish council meetings. And I understood the process.
Yeah.
And just thought I could bring these talents, the talents that I had, to the city that I was charging other municipalities for providing service to bring it to the city.
You had an expertise that you could give to your community.
Well, and I've always said this, that I have a tremendous advantage over most mayors in South Louisiana and other places as well because of what I've done in my private practice. So, but they were, they were grants that I thought were out there that we needed, and I thought the town in some cases was being neglected so far as its cleanliness and what we could do. I just thought that we could do a better job overall, and
not necessarily a specific initiative, just across the board.
Just across the board. I think a fresh look at it was what I was after. And I've seen many municipalities who have mayors that have served for a very long time that have done a great job. And Matt, I think what's happening to a lot of older folks that have been in public office a while, they're having a tough time adjusting to social media. and I have a friend of mine that had been a mayor for 32 years across the lake. And he chose not to run when I ran last time. I asked him why. I said, why did you choose after 32 very successful years as mayor?
Right.
Why did you choose not to run? He said, social media. He said, I just can't handle it.
I guess which aspect? Because now we feel like we have to. That's a very important method of communication, to talk with our constituents, to be talked to by our constituents. But then also I've actually seen some local officials that they themselves are using it in maybe the not the best way because of putting out opinions that kind of stir things up. So are you seeing both of those, or are you seeing more of the
especially during a campaign season? You see a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, people are very brave to sit behind that screen and tell you something.
Yes.
And not so brave to come sit in your office and tell you that face to face. You know, I'm sure you've seen a lot of that, and I see a lot of it as well. But when I took office in 2004, I made a personal commitment to myself to answer every telephone call and answer every email every day before I left the office. Because you don't turn that phone call, it doesn't get any better. It only gets worse.
Sure.
And in some of the phone calls, you look at the notes and you say, gosh, I really don't want to make this telephone call.
Right.
But then you go ahead and make it, and it's not nearly as bad as you thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's helped me. That's helped me a lot. And I've spoken with other mayors, new mayors, and I've given them that advice as well. And they thank me for it because it does.
Well,
it does help.
And especially in a small town where it's just a little more practical, that access to your local leaders is really important to people. They want to, if you don't call them back, you're probably going to run into them at the grocery store, the post office, church.
Yeah, you'd rather talk to them on the phone than
rather be proactive and make sure they know you are responsive.
And that's my job. You know, they've got a question. Some of them are big questions, important things. Some of them are just so very minor.
Yeah.
But you still need to address them regardless, whether you think it may not be important to me, but it's important to them.
Yeah.
So if it's important to them, it needs to be important to me.
It becomes important to you and it needs to
be.
Let me ask this, because you have a very different perspective. Now, I had a very steep learning curve. I'd never been on council. I'd come to several council meetings before as just an interested citizen. I had a business downtown, and so the decisions are being made would impact that at city council meetings. I wasn't as aware of some of the resources at the state and the regional level in Georgia, or how things worked from utilities and public safety. So I had to learn a lot really quickly, because all of a sudden I was the decision maker. Your background and your professional career kind of gave you a leg up. You had a lot of experience. You had a lot of contacts that I'm sure were very valuable from day one. So you were probably more than most had kind of your eyes wide open about what would be involved, what you'd be dealing with. But I want to ask you, what are some of the issues? Because you were elected in 2004, so sworn in 2005, I assume.
Actually, four.
Or right away.
We did the elections that we talked about previous.
Yeah.
Our election was in March.
Okay.
We took office
spring.
Took office July 1st.
Okay. So when you became the mayor in 2004, what were some, if any, and I feel like there should be some, issues that you weren't expecting to deal with, that those things that were important to someone else that maybe you weren't thinking of before that you ended up dealing with more than you thought you would, and maybe some things have emerged since 2004 that would be in that category?
They were some of those things. You know, we have an aging infrastructure here.
Yeah.
And it's always a challenge to fix some of that, and it's expensive.
Oh yeah.
But we found ourselves back in 1999 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
The city had made a huge loan to repair its wastewater treatment facility, and at that time it was a 20-year loan, so it was paid off in 2009, and at that point we were able to begin to bank some of those revenues that we had to add to that bill in 1999. So we were able to bank some of those that gave us the opportunities to receive grants because we had the matching money for our sewer system.
Well, yeah.
But the biggest thing came to us unexpected, and I think everybody remembers this, even whether you were here or not, was Katrina hit us in 2005.
Yeah.
Huge, big, you know, big.
Yeah.
Worst national disaster Louisiana had ever seen. And, you know, I find myself 14 months into the mayor's office, 2 months after having bypass surgery.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, it was huge.
Yeah.
It was just a big, big event. But we had prepared before. You know, we watched it and we knew that we were going to get hit. And we had prepared, had contractors lined up because we knew we were going to have a lot of wind damage.
Yeah.
But we didn't quite expect that we were going to have as much as we did. But we had contractors lined up as soon as the storm passed to be able to help us get the streets open so that we could at least get the utility companies in here.
Yeah.
Energy first and foremost.
And this is one, let me just ask this to give people context, because this is exactly one of the reasons I started this podcast, is when you think Hurricane Katrina, you think New Orleans. And there are numerous small towns that were impacted just as much, maybe even worse, and didn't have the same resources or attention from the state or federal government to come in and do those things. How far are we sitting right now from New Orleans?
Oh, we're about 50 miles,
okay.
50 miles north of New Orleans.
Yeah.
Now,
so that impact came in and everyone, you know, focused on that. And obviously there was a lot more people there and some different issues, but yeah.
We had wind damage.
Yeah.
Not like New Orleans that had water damage. I mean, they were underwater
right.
in some cases in New Orleans for over 10 days.
Right.
But we had wind damage, and because we were, had been proactive in getting contractors lined up to help us clean up, we got utilities back here quicker than most areas mm-hmm. because, for sure, energy and the energy support team couldn't get to New Orleans because it was flooded.
Right.
So they had their a lot of their crews stationed over here, so we were able, because we had roadways open, they could energy could and the power people could get in here, you know, and boy did we learn some lessons there. We are so much better prepared now for a storm should we have another one. And several years after that we had Gustav and Ike
mm-hmm.
to a much lesser degree,
sure,
but
sure.
we still had damage, but
the lessons learned still helped.
The lessons
you
learned
better prepare
were
for
there
those.
And then at that time we had old diesel generators for City Hall and mm-hmm. for our maintenance facility over there. Well, now we have generators on every lift station, every water plant, every water well, every, you know, City Hall, police station, fire stations. So we're much better prepared now than we were then. But my gosh, we came very, very close to losing total water service here because the generator that was feeding the well and the pumps failed. And just by luck, we had a person who was an electrician that worked down at one of the chemical plants on the river and was able to get there and get the part that we needed and get back in service. And we had a, you know, we had a generator that was smoking like a locomotive, but we still had water.
That's not what they're supposed to do, is it?
No, it's not what they're supposed to do. But, you know, we learned that, and we learned some good lessons about people and helping and volunteering. And when the first responders came to help as well, you know, we had to house them. We fed them. You know, it was some of the grocery stores that had food that didn't have generator service brought it over to the fire stations, and we had coolers and generators over there. So we probably fed 200 people a day that were helping us recover over the fire station, breakfast, lunch, dinner. And all that was done, and we had volunteers. And actually, we were able to house some of those volunteers at some of the schools. My wife and some of the teachers out at the high school would go out and wash clothes. You know, it was just a trying time.
Yeah.
But, you know, here we are. Yeah. We recovered. As a matter of fact, we talked about that last week or early this week in our forum that, you know, people just, you see the best and you see the worst in people sometimes in those, yeah. in those days. But we, you know, everybody, neighbors helped neighbors. It was important. Matt, I'll tell you, one of the best ways of communicating with the public at that time, because we were few cell phones, few cell phone towers.
Right.
We were just
quite
kind
as,
of shooting
connected.
In the dark here. You know, nobody, we had no idea that New Orleans was in the shape that it was in.
Yeah.
But we found the church groups and the church congregations our best way to communicate with people and get the word out. And then we mm-hmm. actually, they joined together, and we had one central supply that yeah. everybody, you know, we got a lot of water in. We got, you know, from FEMA.
Right, so they
water.
Were just
we
donating get, necessities.
We get, yeah. these MREs.
Yep, meals yeah. ready to eat.
Yep.
We got those. I've had a couple of those in my day.
by the tanks. But, you know, and then they'd bring them in on large trucks, and then we'd have to get volunteers to unload the trucks and then get them distributed and bring to the distribution centers that the churches were on. And they were, I tell you, their services were invaluable
yeah.
to us. They worked hard. People, like I said, washing clothes and keeping the first responders. We had crews in from New York, you know, yeah. and of course they, you know, we have a way of cooking some pretty good food up here. And some of the firemen that were there, some of the full time and some of our volunteers worked tirelessly to be sure that everybody was fed and had a place for them to rest. But in this recovery, you know, went on for a year afterwards. But,
oh, yeah.
We cooked over there for maybe 120 days.
Wow.
And then began to slack off. But everybody, you know, we're much better prepared. On the city level, we're prepared. On the parish level, we're much more prepared. And even on the state level, we're much more prepared
sure.
to deal with
it. Sure. And that's good, because that's how you learn. Okay, we didn't have this right, so next time we'll have it right. But what you just described is really that sense, and we see it all over the place, is when disaster strikes. And there's all kinds of different examples of that.
Yeah.
That shows you the character of a community, and especially in small towns and communities in bigger cities too. And I don't mean to say otherwise, the big cities don't have this, but that's when people pull together. And it doesn't matter what you had a squabble about the week before, mm-hmm. politically or otherwise, you just take care of each other. And if that means washing clothes because someone can't,
yeah.
it just happens. And those church organizations and other organizations just do it. 120 days of meals, prepared meals for people?
I could I could be off on that. It's been ten years ago, but it's still...
Either way, more than just a week.
oh, more than just a week, forever and ever, you know.
Yeah.
It got to...
And just taking care of each other
of people
and making sure.
And, yeah, and the people that were here with the utility companies, you know, we had nothing else. I mean, if our fire department wasn't cooking, there was nowhere to eat.
Right.
Nobody had... I mean,
right.
we were out. Fuel was like gold almost because we couldn't. And then we knew, you know, and what we had to do, and this is our police chief that was elected when I was, we had to make some pretty tough decisions about the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
And people were exiting New Orleans in massive amounts of cars and trucks and buses. And we were the first high land when you come from New Orleans. And we have two exits off the interstate into Ponchatoula. But we had nothing for them to come for.
Right.
We had no gas. We had no food. I mean, so our chief took a really bold stand, and we actually barricaded one of the exits off the interstate because they had to keep going because we had nothing.
Right. Yeah, the control.
We had, and then,
so you're having a hard time maintaining for the people that were here.
That's
so,
right. Yeah. And since, you know, another lesson learned was on the state police level and transportation level, there was contrabands, one-way closing interstates, one way north, you know, I-55, I-59, which has really been improved since that time. But, you know, it was just it was a tough time for South Louisiana.
And that was in your early days.
That was in my early days, you know. And then we got great lessons working with FEMA. You know, it got really frustrating at sometimes because you needed to be reimbursed for something. And, you know, you'd send volumes and volumes of paperwork that they were needing to be able to be reimbursed and to be able to document it, and you send it over there, you might have something as big as a Sears catalog, old Sears catalog, and you'd send it over there, you'd make the copies, and you'd send it to them, and then a week later they'd call, you know, we don't have that, we can't find that. So we did that about three times. I had to deliver that particular package, like I said, was probably Sears catalog, probably 4 or 6 inches thick. So finally, the last time we sent it over there, they said, you know, they kept on losing it, couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. Because they had a tremendous amount of paperwork over there anyway. So the last time we sent it over there and they finally got it, we copied everything in pink. Said, just look for the pink package. So whatever it took, you know, we were ready to do it. But I'm happy to say that we were reimbursed 100% for what we were supposed to be reimbursed for through FEMA funds. And we developed a very good working relationship with them as well.
So that was in your first term.
That was
as the mayor
of
Ponchatoula.
That was in, I was 15 months in.
Yeah. So obviously that didn't do enough to scare you away because that was 2004. Terms are 4 years. So you've been in for a while since then.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a summary of some of the things that you've taken on since then.
After Katrina, you know, it was a tremendous amount of growth that happened here. The population of the parish increased, I think, by almost 30% because the residents down in St. Bernard and Plaquemine parishes and even Orleans and Jefferson decided they needed to be somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need to be.
So you had this, yeah.
Yeah, so we had this mass.
Well, let me ask this. So what's the population now of Ponchatoula?
Well, at the time, I think we were 5190, and today we're 6,500.
So from 5,100, and now you're 6,500. So.
Right.
So you are a city. I learned on my trip to Louisiana that there's villages, towns, and cities, and 5,000 plus is city, the city of Ponchatoula.
That's correct. We were a city when the storm hit.
Right, but, city before, but yeah.
You know, it just grew. And so we, you know, there was a lot of growth within the city,
mm-hmm.
but there was exponential growth outside the city
right.
into the parish. You know, we had to adjust for that. We had to adjust for traffic, additional traffic.
Yeah. So you had a big storm in your very first term, and you've essentially had growing pains to some extent to deal with ever since.
That's right.
That's interesting.
That's right. But, you know, we've been very successful with obtaining funds to, you know, expand our water and expand our sewer. And
mm-hmm.
like I said earlier, we were able to get generator services to all our major lift stations and all our major buildings. You know, it was just having to keep up. I mean, and every day was, you know, that was extra. It was the everyday stuff that
right.
we had to do as well and we had to deal with.
Yeah, there's the maintenance of what you have and then there's the building of what you'd like to have.
That's right. And but we did that. And then, you know, after Katrina, and then we dealt with Gustav and Ike, which was to a lesser degree, but still a problem. We entered into a situation, an occasion that happened down in St. John Parish, which is just south of us by about 40 miles. they discovered what was called a brain-eating amoeba in their water system.
Oh, my goodness.
In St. John. And DHH immediately ordered additional chlorination to all systems. Mm-hmm. And what happened to us, we had just drilled a new well, and it just had a very trace of manganese in the water, which was certainly within standards and still within standards, but with the combination of the injection of chlorine into the system, that additional chlorine, it began to react with that manganese, and we had the brown water issue, you know, that happened. And we went through a year or so where we would have sporadic brown water, and we couldn't identify
it. And it was just the combination of that.
It was a combination of that. So we hired a professional group, a water specialist, and we hired another engineering firm to put our system on a model so that we could monitor exactly where things needed to be and where water quality was. And we found out that we needed to add to our water system. And the only thing we were putting in our water system prior to this event was chlorine. Mm-hmm. And they added the amount of chlorine that reacted with the manganese. So then we had to put a sequestering agent in our water to address the manganese. And then we found that our water was very soft. And so we had to put some phosphates in there. And we've just about got it balanced. We put our water system on this model I referred to, and we began what's called unidirectional flowing water flows.
Now, it sounds like you should have an honorary degree in chemistry by this point.
I'm telling you, we learned, you know, and it's been quite a topic, you know, in the public for a while. And,
of course. So,
and, you know, and it's my fault, you know.
Well, it's your responsibility either way.
So, because I did the same thing.
And we worked on it, and I'm proud to say that we've just about got the beast tamed. The number of calls that we're getting on brown water is reduced drastically.
Yeah.
But this unidirectional flowing, at the end of October, we'll do a total system flush again.
Yeah.
It's a very precise procedure because you need to be sure that you have a certain amount of pressure in certain sections to be able to cleanse and scour the pipes.
And these are the things you have no idea about any of this. It's not like you study this.
Yeah.
And now you're the key decision maker for the city on these matters.
Well, we actually depend on the consultants for that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know,
I
yield
to people that are more educated in these topics and bring them in and trust them.
And, you know, I think during the process, it kind of began to be a little bit of a political issue, football. But we have a lot of areas outside of the incorporated limits that still has a Ponchatoula address. So some people think if you got a Ponchatoula address, you're in the city of Ponchatoula.
Right.
Well, that's not the case. So we were getting broad calls from broad areas.
Now, do you supply water and wastewater services outside the city?
No, we don't, because we have water districts and sewer districts that surround us.
Okay.
And they're franchised areas, and
right.
we can't.
And so they're kind of regulated that way.
Right.
You're not allowed to go into those kinds of things.
We're still getting – they're having brown water problems as well.
And so they're blaming on you just because the Postal Service says that they're in Ponchatoula, not because
they're in
the incorporated city
limits. Anyway, we've addressed ours. As a matter of fact, Wednesday night – I got a text from our city attorney who lives out in Springfield, out in a very nice subdivision called Carter Plantation. He sent me a picture of his water, and he said, "You caused this," in a joking way.
Because
he's 8 miles away, and he sends me this picture.
Oh, goodness. I just saw a picture of some brown water.
and that's them. That's not our system.
Right. It's
whatsoever.
It's something. But you get pinned on.
Oh, yeah.
Or gets pinned on you.
All the time, you know. And I told it in the forum Wednesday night, I said, you know, trust me, there is no one in Ponchatoula that wants to get rid of this problem more than
me.
You know, and it's true. But as it plays out, I think that we've identified our problem.
Yeah.
We know what our problem is. We've addressed it. I think we're way ahead of some of the water systems that surround us. And I think that at some point in time, they're going to have to do exactly what we did.
Yeah.
It's time-consuming, expensive, but it's just something that you got to do.
Yeah.
You know, we've always been known for great water here. And unfortunately, we hear that some rumblings that they may increase the chlorine again.
Okay. Beyond the current increase.
Beyond the current increase. We're just waiting for that. But I think that we have the analysis set that if it does, we know exactly what we need to do so far as adding sequestering agents in our phosphates. So
you came into office because you wanted to make sure things ran a little more efficiently, took advantage of things, a little economic development, and you end up dealing with the infrastructure issues, probably become the most regular thing you have to deal with because it's so important. It's so basic that when there's a problem with that, it's a big problem.
Well, again, I had experience there because of our engineering firm that we worked with.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I had a tremendous advantage over most, but that's an issue that I think I'll probably end up dying with, being blamed for. But I don't think anyone can really, well, they can, they've said it, but you could have done more, you could have done more, you could have done more. You probably,
yeah,
part of that. I mean, yeah, you get a lot of that. But you know, on the positive side, let's move to our economic development. We're very proud of the industry that we do have here, and it's a good, clean industry. Elmer Candy Company. I don't know, that's a big name around here. One of the largest chocolate manufacturers in the United States, located right here in Ponchatoula. They've been here. They're an old New Orleans candy company that moved up here some 50, 60 years ago. They just completed a $40 million expansion here in Ponchatoula.
Here in Ponchatoula?
Here in Ponchatoula.
Well, that's a good thing.
It's a real good thing. Great corporate citizens there, a big employer of residents here. But right here in Ponchatoula, the company's probably 125 years old or better. Mm-hmm. So they spent $40 million here last year.
So no flash in the pan company here.
No.
You're over 100 years, you're well established.
And then we have an industry here called J&M Industries, located in an industrial park, one of the largest tarp manufacturers in the United States.
Wow.
They did a $3 million expansion. No, I think they did a $4 million expansion 2 years ago.
That's just an extra million.
Yeah, just an extra million. Just a couple more zeros.
Yeah.
And we have a company called Reagan and Massey, who actually are known for, started in the dog food packaging business and then moved to grass seed. And now they're blending chemicals and herbicides.
Okay.
So, and they did a $2.5 million expansion.
And just with those three examples, that shows a good bit of diversification in the types of industries you have here.
That's correct.
And that's something that people want to do. You've already got it, it sounds
and
like.
And what that reflects,
at least to some degree,
positively for us, in 2004, our assessed valuation was right at $31 million.
Mm-hmm.
Last year's tax rolls showed almost $60 million.
Okay.
So all of those things help.
Yeah.
And then when you apply the millages to that, it helps the budget
right
substantially.
Right.
Now,
a lot of small towns are dealing with shrinking tax digest, so that's you're not in that boat, thankfully.
Let me move to one other thing.
Yeah.
That happened about the same time. Walmart entered the picture and expressed a desire to locate here in Ponchatoula. You know, small town, you know, they don't like the Walmart word, but honestly, here we are. Their projections were $40 to $75 million a year in annual sales.
Wow.
So to the city of Ponchatoula, it meant anywhere from an additional $800,000 a year to $1.5 million.
Yeah.
And then to the parish, it meant half that, because we had a 2% tax, they have a 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really big, and the employees, and a $26 million investment in the city.
Yeah.
I mean, and there was a lot of opposition to it. They had to rezone some property because they wanted to be sure this was right. We had some conflicting things in our zoning ordinance that could have caused the problem, but we resolved it. They wanted to have that totally resolved, that question put to rest before they made their investment. So it went through a rezoning process, went through the public hearing process, and we heard all the horror stories that this big box store was going to cause the city of Ponchatoula. We had a very astute planning and zoning board, and our council recognized the benefits. So we had a public hearing scheduled for a Monday night at our regular council meeting to okay the rezoning request.
Yeah.
And that weekend, I pick up the Wall Street Journal on Saturday edition. It says, you know, communities across the West turning their keys into the counties because they can't maintain themselves anymore because mm-hmm. there's no tax base. And here we were, about ready to get the goose that was going to lay the golden egg for us for the future. And we had this question. But as it turned out, the zoning board's recommendation to rezone was upheld by the city council. And so we rezoned. After that, you know, a year and a half later, Walmart opens and their projections are exactly what they said they were going to be, plus
wow.
some.
Wow.
Plus some. So not only did we gain by the generation of sales tax, we gained by the ad valorem tax that we were getting that was added to the millage. That was 2.6 mils that went on to that assessment. So all of those things, you know, commercially has helped us, residentially has helped us be where we are. Now, to further that, we're debt-free.
Well, that's a good thing.
Not too many municipalities in Louisiana can say that, but we are debt-free. And because we're debt-free and we have reserves, we were able to take advantage of a lot of grant opportunities through FEMA, through Federal Highway Administration, because we have the match.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have the match, you're really not even in the ball game anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've just been fortunate. We've worked hard, and we're fortunate to be where we are.
I've got some questions about how you did that, but also what's in the future, because you've got some new initiatives going. But before, I want to pause for just a minute, because I've got a series of questions I asked my guests. They're get-to-know-you questions. I feel like I've got to know you a little bit, but I'm really going to get to know you now. And maybe people that think they know the mayor of Ponchatoula, they're going to learn something new here. So I got four questions. The first one is, do you now have or have you ever had a nickname? Now, I know you're Robert, you go by Bob, but is there another nickname you've ever had?
All my close friends call me Zab.
Zab.
Z-A-B.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I have three grandchildren.
Yeah.
And my name to them is Z-Paw.
Z-Paw. Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to say Zab or something.
No, Z-Paw. And you know, when they asked me what I wanted to be called, I said, well, how about Z-Paw? And they said, they'll never get that. That was the first thing they said, Z-Paw.
Okay. So your kids told you their kids weren't going to catch on.
They weren't going to get
the grandkids are sharp.
Oh.
You said Z-Paw. They said, no problem. We got this. Z-Paw.
They got it.
All of them.
They got it.
All right. Z-Paw or Zab. All right. Next question. What is your go-to karaoke song? There's a karaoke singing contest to defend the honor of your fair city of Ponchatoula. What would be your go-to karaoke song?
You know, I have never done karaoke. Never.
So we're take this answer. We're going to set this up, and it's going to be a great downtown attraction. Zab in concert karaoke.
I don't know. Pick one out. Give me one. Faith, tell me.
he's calling in for backup now.
Yeah, I'm calling for backup now. You know, I love music. But
we can come back to that question.
Nah.
This question, I've had people on
you know,
and they pass, and then we come back to it at the end.
Well, let's stay in Louisiana. Let's talk about our entertainment in Louisiana, and I immediately think about Jimmy Davis and You Are My Sunshine.
You Are My Sunshine karaoke. Former governor wrote that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Singing governor. Good governor.
Probably how he got elected, at least part way.
It didn't hurt, I'm sure.
No. All right. You Are My Sunshine. All right. Next question. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
I'm a meat eater. I love a good tender medium steak, ribeye.
Ribeye. I was going to ask you what cut. You got that.
A ribeye. You know, and I,
ribeye
and let me,
cooked medium.
Let me tell you this so you know a little bit more about me. I guess in the last 5 years, I've kind of taken over the kitchen at our house.
Okay.
So I do most of the cooking. And, you know, I have a slow cooker that I use for beans and soups.
Yeah.
I have a dynamite recipe for chicken. It's a combination of dates and olives and a lot of spices, oregano, and a little wine, a little molasses.
So you're creating your own favorite dish.
Well, I'm not saying I'm creating them. I've cooked recipes for years and years.
All that combination. I'm not familiar with the recipe that goes with what you just put together, but maybe that's a Louisiana thing, and I just need to get educated.
It is good, and as I understand it, I'm going to make that dish Tuesday night for my campaign committee.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're gonna feed them. We're gonna feed them well this week.
All right. Final question: if you could attend any concert of any singer, any duo, band, group, any kind of performer, whether they are dead or alive, whose concert would you want to attend?
You know, my wife and I love Broadway, and there are a few people that I was hoping that I would get to see perform on stage.
Yeah.
We were fortunate enough years ago to see Ray Charles perform in New Orleans at the Orpheum Theater. And the Orpheum Theater is a smaller, more intimate theater.
Yeah.
We had season tickets down there for the season and had first shot at any other performances that they were able to book. So they booked Ray Charles. We were on the seventh row watching Ray Charles, and I'm telling you what a performer he was. I mean, he played for a solid hour, and he would rear back on his stool, and you just knew any moment he was going to fall. But he was classic.
He leaned back just to the point of.
It was classic. And the person that I always said I wanted to see perform on Broadway was Carol Channing.
Okay.
And never got to do that.
So which one? You pick two now.
I saw Ray Charles.
Them both in concert together?
Oh.
One opening for the other?
My gosh. What a
big combination.
It would be. And you know, and I'm a country music fan. I like the Grand Ole Opry, and we've been to the Grand Ole Opry several times because when my daughter was in school there, and they're there now. They live in Brentwood, just outside of Nashville.
Yeah.
But I used to go outside and listen to the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday nights. you know, when here. So anyway.
So Ray Charles and Carol Channing at the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, yeah, there you go now. And mix in a little Jeannie Seeley with that, too. You know, we'd be good.
Compilation concert going on. Did Ray sing George on My Mind?
Oh, absolutely.
Of course he did. Just want to bring that up since I'm in Louisiana.
He sung all of his great tunes, you know, and it was a wonderful night, you know. He had a lot of wit with him too, you know.
I'm sure.
In between, but just to be able to see him that close up was important.
In a smaller venue, that's
in
pretty
a small
cool.
venue, yeah.
Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm.
Well, I want to talk more about Ponchatoula. And actually, I kind of want to ask a question based on what you were just talking about earlier with those industries. You've got some nice corporate investments coming in recently. And so your tax digest is increasing, which is the opposite direction of what a lot of small towns are dealing with right now. You got a sales tax revenue that's increasing also. So you got some good things going on. We talked about the population increase, partly due to Katrina and people kind of moving farther out of New Orleans because of that. But what would you attribute some of those new investments to? What's going on in Ponchatoula that's making people want to invest here and obviously move here? Because there's other options. So what is Ponchatoula getting right?
Well, I think that, you know, our location is kind of prime. I think that the industry's like that. You know, we're almost at the intersection of I-55 and I-12. That's important to us. You know, the accessibility to New Orleans and Baton Rouge is very helpful. You know, we're about 35 minutes from the airport. I'm about 45 minutes from the state capital in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
And I think transportation is key. We've got the Illinois Central Railroad running right through, well, Illinois Central, sorry, date myself now, CN through here, which played a large part in the development of Ponchatoula through the years. But I think, you know, and it's a friendly climate. It's busy. We, the city of Ponchatoula, along with the parish, is very accommodating to industry. We help in any way that we can through benefits that come from the Louisiana Economic Development Foundation. I mean, their agency. And then we have a Tangipahoa Parish Economic Development Foundation as well. I think industry gets treated very well when they come here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a good place to be.
You've already referenced Faith Allen, who's actually sitting with us listening to your interview, and we're in her office at her conference table, and you actually already said she's got a nicer and bigger office than you do as the mayor.
Yeah.
And that's a new position that you created and got her in. And so there's some additional, I guess I'll call it revitalization efforts, whether economic development wise or specific to your downtown. So talk about some of those things, because that's not something you did 10 and 12 years ago. It's something that's going on now. So you continue to find some new initiatives. So talk about what's been going on just recently.
Well, you know, Matt, as you've said, we have a nice downtown. We have some nice bones down there. We did recognize in the last year or so that some of our businesses down there were struggling. We've been looking at this idea for a long time. Some cities in Louisiana have been very, very successful in using the downtown development district designation. We thought that's the direction we needed to move in, and we have. Faith Allen has been our director here for about 4 months now. He's done a tremendous job, a recent graduate from Southeastern University, hometown girl, you know, just like all of us. I mean, we've been here all our lives. She's got some great ideas. She has pretty much designated the district that we're going to approach the legislature with in the spring. We have a board that she's met with, I think this week had the second meeting with. It's a 7-man board. And we have a diverse group here that have businesses downtown and work downtown. They've got some great ideas, and Faith has challenged them with certain things to bring back to us. And we look forward. It's a new initiative. We're looking for great things to happen with it. Faith has met with the State Historic Preservation Group and the Downtown Development Group on the state level, and they've been tremendously helpful and very They, along with us, have been very impressed with the work that Faith has done. So we're looking for big things downtown.
Yeah.
More events.
Still going strong.
Yeah.
Well, Mayor, as we wrap up our time together, I just want to give you an opportunity, like I do all my guests, to let you speak directly to our audience and tell them why they should come visit or maybe come live in Ponchatoula, Louisiana.
You know, we're very fortunate, as we've spoken before, to be located where we are. We have a tremendous draw for tourism here. We have a great Tourism Commission. We have probably the most festivals of any parish in Louisiana. In April of every year, we have the annual Strawberry Festival. We've been told, and nobody's really counting them one by one, but we could have a, you know, as much as 300,000 people here on the weekend.
Goodness.
It's a huge, huge festival. I think this year will be the 48th annual.
Okay. And, so not a new festival.
Not a new festival at all. Beautiful berries, and if, on a beautiful weekend, it is a lot of fun, a lot of people in town. So, you know, we're very centrally located. Let me say that one time again, that from New Orleans and Baton Rouge, you know, it's a great quality of life here. We'd love to invite y'all to at least tour, and then maybe you would want to come live here in the future.
Well, there you go. Mayor Bob Zabbia, thank you so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
And Matt, thank you for being here. I mean, we're gonna step outside and take a picture in front of our strawberry.
That
our
sounds 12 good.
Foot strawberry.
We'll make sure to put that
Let's
on social that media going. So everyone can see that thing.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Bob Zabbia for talking with me. I also want to thank the Louisiana Municipal Association for their support of this episode and for recently inviting me to attend their midwinter conference in Baton Rouge. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors for this season, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, and the Southern Mercantile for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. Join us on our next episode as we explore another small town in Louisiana. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.